This is Autoline After Hours, episode 2 for Thursday, April 9th, 2009, Brooming the Board. Watch Autoline After Hours live at AutolineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2400 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in the iTunes Music Store. Here now is your host and David Caruso look-alike, John McElroy.
Welcome to another edition of Autoline After Hours. Joining me in the studio here is Jason Vines. Jason, great to have you back in the studio.
Great to be here.
And we've got, I keep calling him Mr. Auto Extremist, Peter DeLorenzo. Great to have him. We got a special guest who's joining us over the phone today, a very special guest. You know, I think it was, I'm going to say 30 years ago, this automotive analyst showed up on the scene and started saying that Chrysler was going to go bankrupt. Either it was going to go bankrupt or it was going to have some sort of government bailout. And everybody went, what? Who's talking about Chrysler going bankrupt? And about, I don't know, 2 months later, everybody realized, oh, she's right. They are going to go bankrupt. And that analyst was Marianne Keller, and Marianne's joining us now. Marianne, great to have you here.
Thank you, John. It's a lot of fun to be part of this.
Yeah. So, okay, 30 years ago, you were the first one to say Chrysler was going to go bankrupt. What's your outlook for Chrysler right now?
They need a miracle.
Yeah, well, I mean, so let's assume for just a second, for argument's sake, they get the deal with Fiat. Is that going to be enough?
Boy, they'd have to stretch those dollars that the government would give them if they found an acceptable way to engage Fiat for a long, long time. I think Chrysler's got, you know, lots of problems. Apart from, you know, we can have a debate about whether or not Fiat would actually do anything for them, because I think you'd probably have everyone agreeing that at $2 a gallon, small Fiat cars are not going to generate lots of earnings. And Chrysler's product line itself is aging, so I don't know how far the money that the government might give would take them.
Do you think the government will really let them go out of business? And I ask it from this standpoint. I mean, I just don't see this administration, the Obama administration, going to the UAW and say, hey, tough luck, guys. Now we're going to throw thousands of more of your members out on the street. I just don't see that happening.
I don't know, John. I mean, I have to tell you that until that Sunday afternoon, I thought for sure that we were just going to get checks written all around. So what happened on that Sunday night with Rick Wagner being tossed out and then the summary reports coming out giving Chrysler 30 days and GM 60 days were really a shock to me. It was not what I expected. I expected, and I think actually some of the Michigan delegations were telegraphing the week before that the money was going to be forthcoming, and so far it didn't come.
Yeah. Jason, well, you used to work at Chrysler.
Well, it's my fear is, okay, they are asking for $6 billion, right? That's what they're going to be given. Is that $5 billion to Chrysler Motors and $1 billion to Chrysler Financial? They're burning cash. We don't know because they're a private equity. They don't have to explain how much cash they're burning, but assume they're on the low side. They're burning $1 billion in cash. That's six more months. And as we know, the Fiat stuff's not going to come anywhere from 18 to 24 months. You're not going to get economies of scale on the purchasing side.
Right.
Now, if they burn through that $6 billion in 6 months, or let's say a year, can they go back to the government? Is the government, with Senator Shelby, my God, and others, they've already said we shouldn't throw money down this hole. Well, they're throwing money down the hole. Will they be able to get more? I don't think so. I don't think Obama has enough political capital to go back a second time. So it's a little scary.
What do you think, Peter?
I think Chrysler's done.
Wow.
I do. I told you that at the Detroit Auto Show. I remember we were sitting there. I said they won't last past the first quarter. And he's looked at me like I was a Martian. But
well, they made it past the first quarter.
Yeah, they have. But Marianne makes an excellent point. With $2 a gallon gasoline, what is this Fiat link up gonna do for them? I mean, I love the 500, but you know, Chrysler's in desperate need of new product. They've got the Cherokee.
And Fiat, by the way, is not in great shape itself. I'm sure you saw that a couple of their executives were boss-napped today in Brussels for a couple of hours.
Right.
Yeah, that's just incredible how they're taking executives hostage.
I wish maybe we should learn that here at the Detroit City Council. We take them hostage.
I don't think we want to go into the Detroit City Council, not tonight at least.
Marian, do you think if they get the money, the deal goes through, they get the money, and they burn through it, because the market doesn't develop, it doesn't look like we're getting too many good signs. Peter's saying the Obamas should get out there and do an infomercial for the America's car companies. I agree with him totally. But do you think they can go back to the government for a second helping?
That's what would happen, but I think that you get to this point where the government gets so deep in that you almost then you start throwing good money after bad, and they've said that they're not going to do that. So, I would put the odds at it being less than 50% that Chrysler will be able to create the kind of package with Fiat that that justifies the cash.
Well, here's what I'd point out is, during the hearings way back, when was that, November or something, the first time?
December 5th.
No, it was before December, I thought.
The first ones, you might be right, were on maybe the 19th or something.
Something
like that.
Anyway, they had some guy out there, he was a pretty bright guy, some Wall Street type, and I can't remember his name right now, and he said, hey, it's going to take $75 to $125 billion. That's what it's going to take.
Right.
And I agreed with him, at least with the $75 billion part of it. And so I think there's this idea in Washington all along that this $6 billion here, the $17 billion there, the real number is $75 billion. And so I think they recognize that. And also, once you give Chrysler $6 billion, I mean, you're in so deep on it. At that point, you say, forget it. You guys don't get any more. And now, we got to bail out your pension. We got to absorb all this unemployment, blah, 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 blah.
Well, there's another problem, John, and it's the fact that Chrysler has on its balance sheet, and you're quite right before when you said that that with Chrysler being private, it's hard to know exactly what their burn rate is. We don't even have a good picture of what their balance sheet looks like, but we do know, because it's been in the news recently, that there are secured debt holders, and they would come ahead of the government. So how do you give money where the assets of the company are collateralized to Goldman Sachs and a few big investment banks who hold that debt? It complicates it tremendously. And I think that right now they're showing some reluctance to play ball on restructuring that debt. They have no reason to.
And what was in the Treasury report their request that they get rid of a lot of their debt or the bulk of their debt? How in the world did they get rid of that debt?
Well, you'd ask the debt holders, as Ford has been doing, to accept equity instead of debt. But these guys don't really have a reason to do that. If you're unsecured, you might consider that. But if you're secured with specific assets, you have the right to claim those assets.
Right. But would you do that, Marianne? I mean, as I keep saying, if you think it's hard to sell a house right now, try selling a car factory.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, so, yeah, you
Chrysler
can...
Chrysler does have... I would suggest to you that Chrysler has some desirable product, and it certainly has one or two desirable brands. So there is value in Chrysler, and I would not underestimate, what that might be worth. I'm not going to guess here what it might be worth, but it's numbers that are billions, not millions. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue or disagree that Jeep is a global, powerful brand.
No question about it. Jeep is a gold mine, potentially.
Nobody, neither Ford nor General Motors has figured out how to make a minivan, except and Chrysler introduced the first minivan in 1984.
Right. And Toyota figured a way how to make one, and so did Honda, and so did Kia.
And mm-hmm. Hyundai.
And Hyundai. They knew how to make them.
Yeah, but think about it. Ford's dropped out of the minivan market, and Mercury, and all the GM brands, and now Hyundai's just thrown in the towel. And if Hyundai's thrown in the towel, I gotta believe Kia's not too far behind. So you're really only going to have the Chrysler minivans, Chrysler, Dodge, Toyota, and Honda, and that's it.
The minivan market is going away. I don't know how long. It's funny that people in their mid-40s, mid-50s that are getting back into a minivan now, from when they had one in the 80s or the 90s when their kids were small. They get into one, they go, ah, damn it. Now I remember why I had this one. This is really, really was good. But then there still is that stigma of the soccer mom that it's so uncool, and that's why Ford went with the Flex, and other people are going other ways with the crossovers.
Well, the Flex is a good vehicle, but it isn't selling right now, and so I'll see what that costs.
Unfortunately for them, at the worst time they could.
But last week, as you guys watch and know, we rated our thumbs up or thumbs down on the different General Motors brands. This week, we're going to do the Ford brands. We're not going to do them all at once. We'll do it throughout the show here. So, Jason, hold up the first brand. Hold it to the camera. We want to get everybody's expert opinion here on Volvo.
Volvo.
Do we give Volvo a thumbs up or a thumbs down? Peter, let's start with you.
I'll give it a thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Why?
We're experiencing this global crush of brands. And the market, you know, everyone says the global market is huge. Well, the global market is shrinking rapidly. I mean, there's very few brands that are going to stand the test of time long term. I don't think Volvo really offers anything anymore. They used to have the safety premise. Safety is the price of entry in any market you compete in today. So, okay, that goes away. Then what do they have? They have performance? Not so much. They have design? Well, sometimes their interiors are kind of cool. But I just don't know. You know, I just don't see it having long legs.
Okay, one thumbs down. Jason, what do you take?
Thumbs down. It's for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to bring back its luster. Peter's right. They had that one marketing thing that set them apart. Everybody else is caught up by law. Some have even taken a lead over them. They lost their styling edge. They really had a hell of a lead there for a while. They were quirky enough. People go, oh, I want that. They have lost their image. And they're not quite luxury, but they're kind of luxury. I had an S80 when I worked at Ford. My wife did. It was a dog. I mean, the vehicle was so underpowered.
Yeah.
It had nice seats, though. My wife said, why can't the domestics make a car with seats?
Well, they always had nice seats.
They were the first ones with a built-in child seat. But they've lost their way, and it's for the new owners to decide. You know, we talked about Saab last week. It's lost its way. The Swedish brands are not chic anymore.
Yeah. Miriam, what do you make of Volvo? Would you give it a thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, considering that it'll probably be a Chinese brand very soon, it'll be a thumbs down.
Right.
I mean, I agree with everything that you said. I mean, Volvo always had a very niche market, and it was extremely hard for them to move beyond that family safety image. And I agree with what you said. The global market is big, but this is a product that if it can sells in very small numbers everywhere, and it's a very expensive brand to support given the potential sales. And I don't know why the Chinese want it, but I guess occasionally they do acquire a foreign brand and see what they could do with it.
Okay, I'm going to be the contrarian here.
I knew you.
Well, look, I mean, I agree with you guys in the sense that safety is the price of entry. Everybody's got safety these days. But you know what? If you stop the people on the street and you say, what does the Volvo brand stand for? They'll still tell you safety. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is ingrained in the public's mind. And they truly believe, somehow or other, Volvos are at least a little bit more safe than everything else out there. I love their designs. I'm driving a C30 right now, test driving a C30. Beautiful little car. I mean, it's really nice. I like all their designs. You know, as we talked about last week, Peter Horbury is leaving Ford, going back to Volvo. I still think there's a story behind that. I don't think he stuck his hand up to volunteer to go do it. That's just me saying so. I agree, Volvo's in big trouble right now. I think they lost, what, $750 million last year?
Mm-hmm.
And a pile of money a couple of years before that. And their sales are down worldwide, and not just because of the collapse.
Right.
I mean, their sales are just down in the gutter. But I think there's still – I think that brand could be revived.
They were
Saab, no. Volvo, yes.
Ford's best brand in Europe – excuse me, in Japan was Volvo. But Volvo – the Japan market has collapsed for cars,
right.
And it's not going to come back in our lifetime. And Volvo's taken a hit, too, so they don't have that cachet of that brand.
Well, maybe they just need to take their safety premise and reinvent it and have, like, soft, squeezable sides, you know, or something that no one's thought of that they can, you know, stake their claim again. But
okay,
it's too late, and the sales are so small that it's really hard to justify the investment that it would take to bring out a new platform and then to market it, and you know, with the potential more sales for any Volvo product in any particular country being tiny, how do you make it pencil? That's the problem with Volvo. I mean, the idea of the acquisition of Volvo by Ford in, what was that, 1999, mm-hmm. Was because Volvo couldn't make it on its own. It needed a big brother. And Ford concluded, well, this was a way to get into the near luxury segment. We have economies of scale. We can support its engineering, et cetera, et cetera. You can't do it. It doesn't work. It didn't work with Jaguar. It didn't work with Saab, and it doesn't work with Volvo. All they did was extend the lifeline a little longer.
And boy, the Volvo people did not like being a part of Ford. We tried to, when I was there, tried to have it on their business cards, Volvo, a Ford Motor Company brand. No. Swedes wouldn't have it. No, we're Volvo. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to be linked up with Ford Motor Company.
Right. Okay, so Ben, get the sound effect ready here, because three thumbs down on Volvo, one thumb up. It goes down the crapper.
It's in the crapper. In the crapper.
Okay, we'll come back.
We'll come back in a few minutes.
Another brand. So let's get past
a double flush.
It's a long way to the cafeteria. Remember that old joke? Okay, next on the list, Marianne, this is something that I had brought up with you when we talked earlier in the week. The General Motors Board of Directors.
Mm-hmm.
These guys got to get broomed or what? What's your take on that?
Well, obviously, a lot of them are going to get groomed. You know, I've spent nearly 30 years on Wall Street and analyzed companies, and since then I've served on four public company boards, including two right now. And so I've had a little experience both analyzing the companies and actually, you know, being in the position that they are in. And I will tell you that the most important thing that a director can do or a board can do is hire and, if necessary, fire the CEO. And it's really astonishing that this board never responded to the crisis at hand. I mean, some of the decisions that they had to have voted on over the last few years, to me, were just incredible. Every time a dividend is paid, the board has to vote on it and agree to it. And that's just one issue. How in the world could this board, since the company basically said we're in trouble in 2004, how could they vote four times a year to pay a dividend when they were paying that dividend with borrowed money? Makes no sense whatsoever.
No, that's,
I mean, that's just one indication. I mean, certainly the continued defense of Rick Wagner during a period when the company loses $82 billion is pretty astonishing as well. Is there nobody else in GM who could have done the job?
Okay.
That in and of itself suggests that they're not doing their jobs because they're supposed to be looking for grooming successors.
Where do you think the replacements are going to come from, and who do you think is going to name these people to the board?
I don't know who will name them to the board. I would not think that there would be any new board or any new directors until we resolve the present situation with GM, because I can't imagine that anybody would want to become a director at General Motors given the uncertainty. You know, should GM go through a bankruptcy, restructuring, whatever you want to call it, then you form a new board. And then, frankly, it will be who the shareholders are. Who would have influence over perhaps who would be appropriate board members.
You're saying the American taxpayer gets to vote?
Well, I'm not sure. There might be some government representative on the board if the American taxpayer is a big shareholder, but that would be the process.
Well,
I wouldn't think we have any board members named now.
So, Peter, you think it's going to be political appointees going on the GM board? Where's your sense of where this is headed?
There's a danger of that, which would...
I don't think that would happen.
It would be such a cluster that someone in Washington would say, you know what, even we know that's a dumb idea. So,
if this all worked perfectly, and there's always the high probability that it won't work perfectly... you get General Motors coming through bankruptcy, you get the good assets in a company, and that company then has a new capital structure, and that company presumably will become a public company. And at that point, there is a new board of directors, and that board of directors will be, you know, named by a variety of people who might be prominent or shareholders. I would imagine that some of the debt holders,
right,
if they converted, because presumably they'd convert into a new company, they would have the right to name perhaps even one of their own.
Right.
So
well, yeah,
it gets complicated, but you should not assume that the government's going to name eight bureaucrats.
Right. Yeah, you got a bondholder that's now going to take 15 cents on the dollar. He's going to say, oh, I want to be on the board.
Yeah, well, I mean, the latest stuff today that I was reading said bondholders might end up with 90% of the stock of the company. It sounds to me, if that's the case, the bondholders are going to nominate who the board is.
Yeah, that's right. they would own it. But if there was the potential for GM to emerge as a, you know, viable company, and there's absolutely no reason to think that you couldn't craft a viable business from the good assets of General Motors, presumably you could have a public company where they wouldn't have 90% of it. They wouldn't want 90% of it.
Okay, Marianne, you said you've been on four boards. If somebody came to you and say, what kind of people, not necessarily names, although name them if you want, what kind of people would you put on a board of a new General Motors?
Well, I know a lot of people have suggested, well, they need CEOs. I would disagree with that. I think that General Motors needs people who understand the car business.
Mm-hmm. That would be a revelation, though.
Oh, I know, because you know we've got people who understand confection and
real
estate and Kodak.
Kodak, yeah,
right.
I mean, I have to tell you, being a board member is a part-time job. It's a huge commitment of time, and for someone to think that an acting CEO can really be as responsible to that role, it's a real tough challenge. And so I think you need somebody who has industrial experience, manufacturing experience. I think you need somebody who has some automotive experience, because the board doesn't need 10 automotive specialists, but a board needs to have a couple of people who can understand the lingo. You're sitting in a boardroom and somebody says something, you better have a person there who can interpret what's going on for you.
You're saying you're going to put Alan Mulally on GM's board then. Perfect.
You know what? Alan Mulally has been a terrific CEO at Ford. And he came to me, he proves the point that you really need to have good industrial experience. He came in with a lot of qualifications that I don't think a lot of people appreciated when he arrived without being a car guy. He understood global competition. He understood manufacturing. He understood unions, because he certainly had his hands full of that in Boeing. And I think he, you know, proved to be a pretty quick study at Ford.
And he showed how to cut costs without killing the patient.
That's right.
And I think that is his claim right now. He knew where to cut, when to cut, and to bring people along with him.
What I like about Alan is he didn't bring in his team.
No.
I mean, he sort of uncovered these gems within the Ford Motor Company. And it's kind of like what Lutz did on the product development side at GM. You know, he didn't broom out all these people. He didn't bring in a whole new team. He just learned how, you know, to work with the people that were there, and he's got them doing better work than they were ever doing in their past.
That's what leaders do. Yeah.
When all is said and done, he's going to be in the top five of CEOs in automotive history.
Alan Mulally.
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I agree with you, and I agree with the statement that, you know, one of the things that always astonished me about GM was really how many competent, qualified people are in that company, have been in that company since the beginning.
Yeah, it's staggering.
And how... how such talent could create such wreckage. And it's really about leadership. And if you don't have the right leader, you're not going to get these people to perform to their full capability. I think you're right, John. Alan did not broom everybody out. He actually managed to find enough people inside Ford and just let them go.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, let's go back to rating a brand, Jason. Next on the list, hold it up to the camera.
Mercury.
Mercury. You take it.
I'll start.
Thumbs up or thumbs down for Mercury?
My personal opinion is thumbs down. They need to get rid of this brand. Ford does. They've got Ford, which is gaining strength and credibility. The quality is way up there. They've got some great entries. And they've got Lincoln, a brand that they pulled out of the toilet because it was in the toilet swirling around. They brought it out. It's still on the ledge, but it's not completely out. I would focus everything on the Ford brand and your luxury brand. Now that you've gotten rid of the Volvo luxury brand, you've gotten rid of Land Rover and Jaguar, those headaches, get the Toyota model. Toyota has Toyota and Lexus. Yeah, they have Scion too. But focus your marketing dollars, your design, your engineering on those two brands. So kill it. And there aren't that many standalone Mercury dealers. And now with what's going to happen with GM and their ability to cast off some dealers, Ford may be able to, because the franchise laws are going to have to loosen up, maybe they can take advantage of it and kill Mercury.
Yeah.
Once and for all.
Peter, what do you think? Mercury.
Well, you can't talk about Mercury without talking about the future of Ford. And the future of Ford, I agree with Jason, it's quite clear, is Ford the brand and Lincoln. Ford is a brand ascendant. It is really... you have to look hard because there's a lot of bad news. It does have real momentum, and they do have some outstanding products coming. They need to focus. They are focusing. That's the other impressive thing about Alan, his capacity to focus and understand what needs to be done in a short period of time is amazing. And they are focusing on Ford and Lincoln. They brought Lincoln back. You know, viable. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Mercury, for all the Mercury fans out there, yeah, it's had a lot of cool cars over the years, but it's going to have to step aside now. Okay. Down.
Okay. Two thumbs down. Marianne?
I agree. I think they're sort of trying to make Mercury the sort of women's brand, but it's just not working. And, I think I wrote about Mercury and why do they have it about 30 years ago in automotive industry with you, John. You know, it was kind of like a dead brand in the 70s and 80s. It was always the sort of tarted up Ford, you know, the Ford with the bow tie. It was never a real product line of its own, and it was just the badge engineering at its worst.
And if you're trying to... go ahead, sorry.
And they don't have the time, the money... the marketing dollars to establish this brand, because it's really hard to rehabilitate a brand that's been in the doghouse for so long. And I just don't think it's worth it. I think GM should only have Chevrolet and Cadillac. That would do the job.
You know, you're saying
can't make an argument, you know, for Pontiac and Buick. It's hard to make an argument for Mercury.
I don't agree with you, Jason, on the women, going after women, because they have the smoking hot model doing their ads. And it's going right towards the... Southern Hemisphere of the guys out there with her. So I just don't, you're right. It's a tarted up, a gussied up Ford, and they don't, your gussied up Ford should be your luxury brand, your Lincoln. That's step up.
Okay.
They can take Lincoln, I think, into the near luxury category where kind of they are with a couple of the cars. So I think that that's the sweet spot for Lincoln. I think that they're getting younger. I mean, God, when you think about Lincoln, what it was when the town car was... the dominant product. It was a limo at LaGuardia.
Yep.
Right. Well, I'd say I'm not quite willing to give it a thumbs down. I'm not giving it a thumbs up. But
you got to go one way or the
other.
Unless we allow a sideways thumb for John.
Yeah.
Okay, John, we will allow you a sideways thumb this time.
Well, here I'll just make two observations. That Lincoln dealers can't survive without the volume from Mercury. Cannot do it. I mean, maybe Lincoln will get them there someday, but it ain't going to do it right now. Killing Mercury right now, I think, would really put the hurt on the Lincoln dealers. Number two is, I'm intrigued by all this product Ford's going to bring over from Europe. And as we all know, they have dynamite product in Europe. Now, if they brought certain models over to be built in the U.S. only as Mercury's, So if you're familiar with the Ford Kuga, I would make that just a Mercury. If you see the Ford Mondeo five-door, beautiful sedan, make that a Mercury. So you don't
What's the personality, John? What's its niche? Is it supposed to be sporty like Pontiac?
No, I'd go with what they're doing. It's a chick car. I would go after women.
Why would you go and give these jewels that you're talking about, these great cars in Europe, and put them in a brand that's dead? Why not help them to build up either Ford or Lincoln? Take two brands with strength and add on to them, make them stronger, as opposed to resuscitate.
Well, what do you do of the volume that the Lincoln dealers need?
I think you got to look at what are most of them are dueled anyway.
You don't kill it off right away, John. You just let it die a natural death, so that there is growth in the Lincoln brand as the Mercury brand eases off.
Okay, I changed my mind. Thumbs down.
And we'll have a moment.
We're killing this brand.
We'll have a moment of silence for some of the great Mercury names. Turnpike Cruiser.
69 Monterey was a great
Monterey.
Yeah.
Marauder.
Yeah.
So, you know, some Mercury fans out there, we feel your pain, but
all right, there's a moment of silence. Okay.
Right.
Hit the sound effect.
Bend the sound effect, please.
Goodbye.
That's the sound of the Mercury brand going away.
Do we have any questions?
Let's see. Here's somebody making more of a comment. He says, Marianne, they call it the bookend philosophy. Caddy on one end, Chevy on the other, Ford on one end, Lincoln on the other. So there you go. And that came in from one of our viewers here. But that's just a comment, not a
question. Well, it's also why those GM and Ford have a better chance of survival. What does Chrysler have in that realm? They have Chrysler, and their luxury used to be, Mercedes. That's not there anymore. So they don't have really the luxury brand, although Jeep borders on it a little bit.
Right.
People that owned Grand Cherokees, when Grand Cherokee was introduced, and this is why Mercedes brought out the ML, they realized that people that had Grand Cherokees, their other car was a Mercedes sedan. Mm-hmm. That's why Mercedes said, let's put the money up. They'd rather have a SUV with our humongous MB badge on it anyway.
Right.
So,
well, we'll get to Chrysler's brands
next week.
We'll take them next week. What I want to talk about now is some of the stuff that came out of the New York Auto Show. And Peter and I know are going to disagree on this. General Motors teamed up with Segway, and they came out with this little personal urban mobility and accessibility something. They call it Puma. Peter, take it from there. What do you make of this?
No, John, you go first.
Okay, I'll go first. I think this thing's cool. And is it going to save GM? No, it's not going to save GM at all. Is it ever even going to show up in a GM dealership? Any of the brands? None whatsoever. But I think that GM has got to be doing stuff right now to jar the public out of this anti-GM attitude. And you got to do it with gee whiz, I never knew they'd do something like that kind of stuff. So here they've got this little urban mobility thing, which, like I said, I think it's really cool. I like it. And I think its importance is just that, where the public will go, oh, my God, GM's doing something totally out of the box here, totally to do with urban mobility. It's green. It's electric. Yada-da-da-da. It's with Segway. It's cool. And so from a public relations standpoint, not a product standpoint, I think it's important for them to do it.
Like the Sequel and the Volt, other major products that were important for their image?
Yeah, I think the Volt is important for their image. They just have to get it out.
Well, I have a ton of respect for Larry Burns and his group. I mean, you spend any time with GM Research and you're just blown away. These are very bright people, innovation everywhere. But I just think here we are at the New York show, and I understand why they did it, and I understand the PR perspective. You know, it was really kind of a double shot for people to say, gee, I didn't know GM would do that. It's kind of like those old GE commercials.
Yeah.
Gee. And then it was for Washington. But meanwhile, here GM has with some of these great products sitting at their dealers now. Their dealers are dying. And they show up at the New York show with this little, rickshaw and
wheelchair, somebody called it.
Well, it's a rickshaw, and it's, you know, I wrote a column a while ago that a lot of people got mad at me. I said Thomas Friedman was hell-bent on turning America into rickshaw nation, and the Thomas Friedman advocates came out of the woodwork, all three of them, and disagree with me.
Two were relative.
But anyway, I just, yeah, I applaud, you know, what everything you said is valid, but I just think here their dealers are dying. Here they have these CTSs that they have some great products, and yet the big splash was this little, you know, scooter thing, and it was just like, I turned on the Today Show, and I'm seeing Meredith riding around. I said, why is this a good thing? I'm just not a big fan of it.
When was the last time you thought GM had great marketing? Or image building? I completely agree with you. This is the auto show is meant to get people into the showroom and get excited about the cars that are there now.
Especially New Yorkers. I mean,
absolutely.
I used to, you know, criticize New York car enthusiasts. There's no such thing as a New York car enthusiast, but I've done a 180. You have to be a hardcore car enthusiast if you live in New York City or you commute. If you're still a car enthusiast after, you know, living in that environment, then hallelujah, you are an auto extremist.
You're not going to buy a Puma for sure.
Yeah, I've changed, you know.
I can't imagine going over the Triborough Bridge in that.
Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with Marianne and Peter. I think it was a good idea, and I think it's because of the pure PR. They need to have people rethinking what these guys are capable. GM really has rocket science working for them. And they've got to start showing that they have been leaders all along. I keep going, Roger Rabbit. Remember the movie?
Yeah.
Who killed the cable car in the movie? GM. Evil GM. And even though they've led with so much innovation throughout decades, I think they need to go into areas like this. Look what Honda did with their plane, their little jet. Honda can do nothing wrong.
The Asimo robot.
And their robot. Oh, gosh, what a great company. I think I'll buy their cars now. And I think GM has to do that. They can't lose sight of their products, and they need to do a better job at telling what great products they have.
Well, I mean, spoken like a true PR guy, I'm glad you haven't turned your card in.
I have not turned my
But, I mean, you know, GM is just, I mean, since the first hearings, I mean, the GM image, I mean,
it's in the gutter.
I mean, even people who weren't thinking about it, after those hearings, when they thought about it, and then the constant media din, Detroit's bad, imports good, you know, they don't call him Dick Shelby for nothing, going in front of the camera, you know, saying, you know, these guys deserve to go out of business and it won't affect anybody else in the country. Let them go. I mean, GM has got this cloud now. Now everyone's saying Government Motors. I mean, yeah, it was a little PR spike, and I hope it worked for certain people who look just dying for a rickshaw.
Well, at least it got the GM name all over the media. I mean, they were on all the shows.
For something other than bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's right. Something other than bankruptcy.
All right.
And I'm with you, Peter.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that, Jim.
The Malibu, the CTS, all that great stuff, they could have trotted that all out, and they did, and everybody would have won. We all seen this stuff.
Right.
I mean, you had to do some sort of gee whiz golly, yeah. Look at that. And it, if you just see the little morning show TV stuff and it spins around, you go, so what?
You know what, John? People looked at it and they said it's a toy because the Segway never revolutionized our lives. Well, and they looked at this and they see, you know, people on the Today Show driving around in it in the studio.
Yeah, it's a lark.
It has no relation to cars.
Yeah. We talked about that before we went on the air, Marianne. The Segway was perhaps one of the most botched launches in the history of innovations because they leaked it out that this major innovation was going to change our lives. So, codenamed Ginger, and people go, what is this Ginger? Is it a cure to cancer? What has this Cayman guy done? And then it comes out that it's a scooter. People go, it's a scooter.
A $4,000 scooter.
It's really cool, but the expectations were so high for that product with the secrecy that they totally botched it, and it's considered kind of a failure, even though it is really a cool thing about how the thing handles. It depends on what GM does with this And where they go. As we said, yeah. Japan, they're not buying cars anymore. More and more kids are going to buy this type,
right,
type of
right.
stuff to get around.
But Marianne, you raised the best point. What does the public think? I mean, you know, we're all opining here, but I would love to know what the average person who saw that thing thought. They think, oh, GM's doing that, cool? Or did they go, what a stupid idea?
No, I think the average person's saying, oh, I can feature myself driving that in 6 inches of snow.
With the semis whizzing by.
Yeah, because the average person just, you know, immediately thinks about their little driving life. And they, yeah, with a semi whizzing by and, you know.
You have the same reaction that you have sort of looking at the person driving a Smart next to a semi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, where, you know, my reaction was, is this sort of meant for a retirement village, you know, to go from the clubhouse to your house to the golf course? Is that what that's for?
For a gated community, hey, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, retirement communities, gated communities, college campuses, certain cities, more likely outside of this country, Singapore, places like that. I think something like that could catch on. But I'm with Jason. I think for PR buzz, they had to do something, and I think they did it.
I would have
liked to have seen some PR buzz around a real car.
Yeah.
That would have gotten some real excitement.
I agree with you.
Into the dealers.
Totally agree with you.
Okay. Time to rate a brand. Jason, next brand.
I think we know where we're going. Lincoln.
Lincoln. Lincoln, Lincoln, Bo Binken.
Start with Marianne.
Okay, Marianne, first up, thumbs up or thumbs down for Lincoln?
Thumbs up. You could tell that from what I said about Mercury.
Thumbs up. Double thumbs up for Lincoln.
Yeah. I, you know, 6-7 years ago, this thing was dead. I mean, this was definitely meant for ladies with blue hair. And
wait, that's Amy Winehouse. I know what you
right.
mean.
Yeah. but seriously, I mean, Lincoln's got a product line today. It never had a product line before to speak of.
And yeah, and they've got more product coming, and they've refocused everyone on the brand and their latest.
And it seems they're. I have not seen statistics on the average age of the Lincoln buyer, but I'll bet it's a little less than 80.
Well, I'm with you guys. I give it a thumbs up, but I think they have a long way to go.
Oh, yeah. They have
product's not there. The product's way better. But, you know, until they have something that can start banging on the door of BMW and Mercedes,
well,
they ain't there.
They'll get that with engineering and design dollars and marketing by getting rid of Mercury. Take that few $100 million, put it towards Lincoln.
Well, I'm with you on that, and they need that. I mean, their latest car, the MKS, is good, but it's not great. And, you know, for what they're charging for it.
I think the MKS presses the reset button for them, which they needed to do.
It does.
It's not great.
Right.
But remember, you were talking about Buick, and sometimes you just need a car that feels good. You know, I've spent a lot of time in the MKS, and I think, it's a creditable effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's
definitely credible. But, you know, they got to burn the midnight hour or the midnight oil in
Absolutely.
Engineering.
Yeah,
and,
they're not there yet.
Take that up a few more notches yet before I give it two thumbs up. I'll give it one thumbs up for right now.
Okay.
Thumbs up all around for Lincoln. Pretty good. That's the sound from the heaven.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're going to get struck down. This is Easter week. Jeez.
Yeah, okay, more from the New York show. Peter, did you see that Acura ZDX?
Yes.
What'd you think?
Did I miss the memo that went around to the design houses around the world that said we absolutely need these four-door sedans that look like coupes? I mean, Panamera Porsche, I mean, talk about against everything in my body about what Porsche stands for, but they're going to bring out a four-door sedan that Wendelin Wiedeking insisted that he could sit in the back, so they had to adjust the roof line 3 inches because he's, what, 6'3"? Well, anyway, I digress, but I don't know. Yeah, it's cool. But do we need another $60,000 four-door sedan that's really a crossover? Maybe.
Well, the thing that struck me just looking at the picture was like, oh, my God, this is Acura's BMW X6.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was like, You know, I'm not convinced that the X6 answers anybody's question.
No, the X6 is the reigning answer to the question that absolutely no one was asking. And then they brought out an M version at the New York show. I was just like, oh, man, you guys are killing me here.
So any comments, Jason or Marianne, on the – Marianne, what do you make of Acura overall?
Honda's still trying to figure out how to get it right. I mean, the Honda brand is, you know, unstoppable. But Acura just can't figure out how to, whether they want to be BMW or Mercedes or or something of their own definition. And I'm not sure this car is going to help very much.
I think Acura really hurt themselves by having vehicles too close to the Honda line.
Absolutely.
And they didn't just come out with some, you know, big, you know, flagship sedan right off the bat. Instead, they had, like, the Integra and stuff, and you could get a Civic Si if you want. I mean, it just – they just botched that, and they're trying to get momentum now, but I don't
know. And had it a long time, and I agree with you guys. They haven't got it right.
Badge
engineering will kill you every time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You asked 100 Americans, maybe – around the world, what Acura stands for, and nobody could tell you.
That's a great point.
No one could tell you.
No. In fact, you might ask 100 Acura executives.
Yeah.
Same answer.
Marianne's right. It's so many missteps, and it looks like they're getting their crap together, and then they fall down. I mean, the TL was car of the year when it came out. But there's no definition to it. I mean, you got to give credit to Lexus. They defined their brand. And remember, it was missteps early on because those were just gussied up Toyotas. They really took the brand by storm, though, and put it in the right direction after the initial.
Back to your original question, I guess they just felt they needed to have one of these four-door crossover thingies because everyone else was having one.
That's what it would seem like to me because I was pretty puzzled by it. But let's go on to some of the other ones. The GMC Terrain, what'd you make of that? This crossover based on the Chevy Equinox architecture.
Well, here's the classic thing, and I've written about this since day one about Extremis. Too many brands, too many divisions, too many dealers. Okay, now we're pressing the reset button with the good GM, and we're putting the bad GM aside. Well, the good GM has one Equinox or Terrain. Not both. And they're going to say, yes, but our GMC buyers demand something a little different. And I'm sitting there, you know what? And Marianne mentioned Honda. You know what Honda's good at? They bring something out, and then they keep working on it, refining it year after year after year. And the next thing you know, people consider the Honda Civic like the standard, the jewel. Why not just do the Equinox and polish that thing to a spit shine. No, we're going to go off and do the GMC Terrain. Or maybe drop the Equinox. Just do something. Pick one for once. Don't do two of the same architecture.
Yeah. I think General Motors slices and dices the consumer a little too finely to justify the brands that they have.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of that. Well, this is aimed at a person who, you know, doesn't eat meat.
I spent 22 years in automotive advertising and marketing, and that was hands down the worst meetings you could go to where they're trying to tell you who this appeals to. And inevitably, when I got older and I was near the end of my career, inevitably I said, you know who your customer is? Anyone who can get themselves to the dealer and has money. Don't tell me it's a 48-year-old guy who likes metal. And, you know, they'd slice and dice, like you said, Marianne, to the nth degree. And after a while, it's just like, you guys are killing me. You're kidding yourselves here. You know?
Sounds like the argument when I was at Chrysler between Dodge. In Chrysler vehicle and Jeep, you had automatic headlights, okay? You could turn them to auto. They didn't offer it in Dodge. I said, why? Well, we have to have brand differentiation. Why? I mean, this is a safety feature. Well, shouldn't everybody get it?
What about the turn signal thing? I mean, you get in some GM products, you don't expect the automatic, you know, the lane-changing turn signal feature, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
And then you get in some other GM vehicles where you expect it, and it's not there. That's the other thing about GM drove me crazy. Where is the focus consistency? You get in a BMW, I don't care what price point, you know you're in a BMW. You get in a Honda, you know you're in a Honda. You get in a GM, well, it depends. Mm-hmm. It's not the way to do it.
Okay, one other big intro in New York. Grand Cherokee. What do you used to work at Chrysler, as I keep saying.
Obviously, hugely important vehicle. And with the death of the gigantic SUVs, it really can have its place.
Because it's really not that gigantic.
No, it's not. Grand Cherokee has one of those loyal owner bodies. Remember when the vehicle first came out, all the Jeep Cherokee owners were saying, this is heresy to bring the softer Jeep out. Well, it wasn't softer. In fact, the vehicle went off-road better than the Cherokee did, and of course it was the new gold standard. This was an important one. The last iteration, a lot of people didn't like the design. Felt it looked just too much like what the Japanese were producing. And here you're in the lead as Jeep, and why do that to yourself? This thing has a potential to be a cash cow, which is mind-boggling. Then when they did the introduction, and my friends did it, they had the head sales guy come out in a Fiat to start the press conference. Why take any focus away from that vehicle? And by the way, the New York market is a huge market for Jeep. By far, I think the biggest in the country.
The whole Northeast is one of Chrysler's biggest markets. And I agree with you. I'm going to make a concession. Since 2000, I've had lots of Chrysler products. One of my favorites was the Pacifica. I don't know why they killed it. I liked it, owned not this current Grand Cherokee, but the previous one, which I loved.
The Tom Gale one.
Yeah, exactly, the Tom Gale one. And I think that they did a good job on this. I just hope that they're able to, you know, live to bring it out.
But I'm with Jason. Absolutely blow it at the New York show. A selling show. It's a selling show. You have people who spend half their lives in yellow cars and black town cars, and they like to go to the auto show and see the stuff. And here's Jim Press driving out the Fiat 500. It's just like, what are you doing? You've got your Cherokee.
He should have done that in Washington because that was the audience. That little trick was.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. He should have done it in Washington.
Where did Chrysler do the first Camp Jeep at an auto show? In New York. They brought all that dirt in, and New Yorkers loved it. Mm-hmm. They don't get the chance to go off-roading, and they got to do it.
I was on CNBC last night and got dragged into a discussion about whether auto shows are still relevant. Are you kidding? You go to New York show, and
there'll be a million people go through.
Yeah, you go to the Chicago show, which is the show you should go to just to get the vibe of what people like. People like auto shows.
Yeah,
this
is a self-pity thing. We got to stop apologizing again for this industry, and they need to start pounding their chest a little bit because you're right. People still like to buy brand new cars, and they like going to auto shows.
Fortunately, the CNBC people who are all New Yorkers were saying, we like going to the auto show. I mean, we look forward to it, you know. When you live in New York, yeah, you go.
Yeah. Okay, we're coming down to the end of the hour here. We got one more brand to rate tonight.
Bum, ba-da.
The Ford Blue Oval.
Which is mortgaged, right?
Yeah, it's mortgaged, right. But I think they're going to pay that mortgage off myself. Marianne, we'll start with you on this. What do you make of the Ford brand?
Oh, big thumbs up. I think they're doing a terrific job. And I love some of the stuff coming from Europe. I think the Fiesta, I think the Twitter ad campaign, you know, sort of starting to get a little buzz on the car before it gets here. I think, and I think, by the way, the Fiesta itself is a great car. So I think it's hopefully positioning it as a younger car, aimed at a younger buyer, not just an economy car, but a fun car. I think is great. And I think some of the other things that they've got in their present lineup, you know, they're not. Are they perfect? No. Edge, as you said, is Flex is not doing as well as it should. It's a little pricey for me. But I think overall they've done a great job. I'm looking forward to the new Taurus in a year or so. So I think Ford's got momentum. I think got momentum in the market, too, because a lot of people have figured out that, you know, they're a player and they're a survivor. When you think about it, there are a lot of people who are American domestic car buyers, and if they're uncomfortable today buying a Chrysler or a GM car, they're going to go buy a Ford.
Who's next?
Well, I've been writing lately. It's the original American car company that's putting distance between the away from the old Detroit 2. Mm-hmm. And they've got the best leadership. I think they've got the best products to tap into from their European arm, and they're making gutsy calls to bring these products over and make them work here. And I just think, you know, yeah, they have momentum. They got a lot of problems. They're not out of the woods, but yeah, it's.
But all the needles are pointing in the right direction.
They're all pointing in the right direction.
Jason,
huge thumbs up. They got to be a little careful. They're bordering on cocky, and they have to be careful. Right now they're the valedictorian of the Reform School. But if this market continues to go very badly, they're burning a lot of cash, and if GM, by going into a bankruptcy or getting a new restructuring that makes them leaner and meaner, you may say, you've already heard Ford saying, well, maybe that's not fair. We need those concessions too. By, you know, playing the cockiness card could hurt them when they really need help with the UAW again or their wherever. So it's a fine line. I understand why they're trying to distance themselves, and they should be very proud of their quality. They've done very well on J.D. Power and Consumer Reports the last couple of years, and they need to ride that. And I think you're going to see Ford making money next year.
Next year?
Yep.
Wow. There's a prediction. Well, I'm with you guys. I give Ford, I think, two thumbs up, in fact. They're doing so much right now that is going to pay off. I mean, you know, we're so close to it all. I'm not sure the public is, even though the public's, you know, they know something's different going on at Ford and that Ford's doing stuff right. But I think a year from now, it's even going to be stronger.
Just think about 3 years ago, they were considered the weakest of the three.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And again, that comes back to leadership, as we talked about all night. But, you know, this narrow focus on this EcoBoost approach to doing powertrain, I think, is going to be real smart. You know, I said all along, Ford has a very conservative strategy, but you know what? It's going to be easier to hit that strategy and pull it off from the top to the bottom of the line. They're way ahead of GM in terms of commonizing their product development process on a global basis. And GM, I think, you know, going back 3 years ago, was way ahead of Ford. So it's very, very impressive to me to see how fast Ford's come. But again, we're rating the brands. And the thing that Ford still has to overcome is when it comes to trucks, no problem, man. They know that customer inside out and backwards. And everything with the product reflects that. When it comes to passenger cars, they're not there.
And that's what they're working on, though.
And
that's
they are.
They're focusing.
And, you know, Marianne, you brought up the Fiesta. I drove it last year. I was knocked out by it. This is going to turn a lot of people's opinions around in this country, not only just about passenger cars, but Ford Motor Company, Ford brand passenger
cars. That car.
You know what you're going to start to see very soon, John, because momentum is important. I think you're going to start to see Ford picking up some fleet sales, commercial fleet sales. You know, corporations buying cars, and they choose.
The good
they're
part
90%
of fleet
domestic.
Sales.
The Transit Connect is going to be
and
huge.
They buy sedans. And I think Ford's going to gain share in that market, and that is going to start, you're going to start to see more stories written about Ford gaining market share every month, gaining sales in the retail, it'll help sales in the retail market. Just that positive news will help get people into the showrooms to have a look.
3 years ago, if I remember right, Ford had the oldest lineup in the business, and now they have one of the newer ones. They flip flop, and that is the core strength on any auto company is the newness, the age of its brand. The older ones are dying right now, and we've got poll results.
This is my producer Chip Drake, who just came on. We've asked you, our viewers, to rate the Ford brands, and here's how it comes in. I don't know if you can see this chart very well, but I can explain it. The Ford brand you guys all gave looks like two thumbs up to me. Lincoln, also very strong. Mercury, down at the bottom. But Volvo, by our viewers tonight, rating pretty strong, almost as close as Lincoln.
We must have a lot of college professors online with us.
That may be. Thank you for filling out this online survey, folks. We really appreciate that. Well, you know, here we're at the top of the hour here. We ought to wrap this up. Remember, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at twitter.com/autoline. You can also follow Peter twitter.com/autoextremist. But anyway, Jason Fiennes, great having you here again tonight. Peter DeLorenzo, great having you. And Marianne, thanks so much for coming in with us tonight. It's been
great. Thank you for inviting me. Had a lot of fun.
Great.
Thanks, Marianne.
Thanks, Marianne.
And you folks, we'll see you all next week.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. You'll find that and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.